Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Let's head on down to the desert, warm up in the Southern California sun, and continue with a tribute to America's national parks. We've been to almost 20 so far on the Wildside News. Now, some of America's finest naturalists, historians, and scientists serve in our national parks. We'll hear from Chief of Interpretation of Joshua National Park, Joshua Tree National Park, when we return here on the Wildside News. So, take a rehydration break and be sure to be here in 2 minutes. See you then.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
America's made up of such an amazing array of natural areas, and our finest natural treasures are held sacred in trust to the American vision of people and their land, a unique treasure that deserves our utmost dedication to preserve. Now, some have looked on the deserts of Southern California as wastelands, and some came to get rich. And thanks to our conservation legacy, some came and found wonder. The wonder is still alive and locked forever into a vast natural diversity known as Joshua Tree National Park. Joe Zarkey is the Chief of Interpretation. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Say, what's your morning like there in Southern California?
Oh, we're having a beautiful morning this morning. It's a typical fall, fairly cool, probably in the 50s. Maybe it's going to hit about low 60s this afternoon. Gentle breezes. It's a great day.
That sounds great. Well, you know, Joshua Tree National Park, I always got confused because I used to know it as Joshua Tree National Monument. And quite honestly, this last weekend, you actually celebrated a special 10th anniversary of what?
Of becoming a national park. Joshua Tree was indeed first set up as a national monument in 1936 by presidential proclamation. President Franklin Roosevelt established the national monument back then. But in 1994, with the passage of the Desert Protection Act, Joshua Tree was expanded in size and changed from a national monument to a national park. So this past weekend we celebrated our 10th birthday as a national park.
Give us a sense of the park. You know, this is a pretty good sized park, and give us a visual image and talk about the wonders there.
It's a good sized park. We're just short of 800,000 acres, 794,000. That translates to about a little over 1,200 square miles. It's laid out east-west in general orientation, which is kind of unusual. Most of your mountain ranges in the western United States trend north to south, but because of the action of the San Andreas Fault on our southern boundary, our mountain ranges tend to run east-west for the most part, which gives the park a little bit of a different orientation. But it's what the locals call the high desert. It's a little bit on a plateau, and it's characterized by jumbled rock formations, granite rock formations. So it tends to be somewhat maze-like in terms of the scenery, and the rocks are not real tall, in some cases a couple hundred, 300 feet, but they tend to invite people to explore, so we get a lot of visitors that like to climb up on the rocks and just kind of get out in that landscape.
Now, the name of the park, Joshua Tree National Park, let's talk about the Joshua Tree. What's so special about the Joshua Tree?
Well, the Joshua Tree is the signature plant for the Mojave Desert. Roughly half of Joshua Tree National Park is in the Mojave Desert, and that northern and western half of the park does have extensive stands of the Joshua Tree. As a matter of fact, the park represents the southernmost extent of the range of the Joshua Tree. South of the park, you just don't find them anymore. They like a little bit higher, cooler climate. They don't like it extremely hot, up around 120, as it does get in the Coachella Valley area just south of the park. So they tend to be, like I say, in the higher, cooler portions of the park. But they're a very unusual plant, certainly the tallest plant we have in Joshua Tree. They get up to 50 feet tall, characterized by long, spiky limbs, very, very unusual.
Now, is it actually a tree or is it more of a cactus?
It's in the yucca family, so it's actually related to lilies, but it's what you would call a tree yucca. And there are a number of different species of the yuccas that get quite tall in North America, even down into Mexico. The one we have here, the Joshua Tree, is the Yucca brevifolia, and it's like I say, the signature plant of the Mojave. It's certainly the most striking plant in the entire Mojave Desert.
Now, recently, the Joshua tree found itself sort of unusual at being under attack. It's kind of an interesting story with that. The critters.
What you're referring to here, we go through drought cycles. We're a desert, so it does get quite dry here. And most recently, in the early 2000 to about 2002, we were in a fairly prolonged, intensive drought. And we saw something we hadn't seen too much of in the past. The bark began to disappear off the Josh trees. And after some investigation and a couple scientists look into it, what they discovered was that a number of different rodent species were peeling off the bark to get to the moisture that was underneath the bark. What the Josh tree represented for them was sort of like a last gasp effort to get water, a last source of water for them as the drought intensified. This has the unfortunate circumstance of killing the Josh trees if the rodents get to peel off too much of the bark, but apparently this has gone on for thousands of years. We just hadn't seen it before.
Very interesting. As we approach the global warming, whatever it is, crisis or future, that may be something you have to look at into the future. Now, when people come to visit the park, let's talk about some of the opportunities. What can people do there?
It's a great place for sightseeing. We have a number of different roads that go through different stretches of the park. One of the main features is there are two deserts that meet and merge here, so there's a very rich desert vegetation. So people come to enjoy the scenery. But the other thing they do, they rock climb. Roughly about 20-25% of our visitors are rock climbers or people who come here to boulder on the rocks. They get up and climb up on the rocks, either using ropes and technical equipment, or in some cases just their hands and their feet. So that's a big portion of our visitor population, and the park is known throughout the world for its rock climbing opportunities. There's something like 6,000 named and described rock climbing routes. Climbers like to call them vertical trails that you can come and explore.
Now, do people require special training or permits in order to do that?
You don't need a permit to climb. You do need permits now to install new bolted routes into the park, particularly in our wilderness areas of Josh Tree, but you don't need a permit to actually engage in rock climbing itself.
How about your hiking possibilities?
Oh, there's hundreds of miles of hiking trails. About 274 miles, I believe, are identified in our wilderness plan of hiking trails here in the park. But you can also hike cross country, and the desert's pretty open and as a landscape, and so people can just get out a map and route find, and see a peak or a ridge off in the distance and head right for it. Of the 794,000 acres in the park, about three quarters have been designated as wilderness. They'll never be developed. So this provides enormous opportunities for wilderness exploration and just getting out there and getting into that desert landscape.
When do most people visit the park to avail themselves of the hiking specifically?
We're a little bit different than many parks. It's kind of hot here in the summertime, so the summertime is our slow season. Our peak season is actually in the spring months, from about February to about the end of April on into Memorial Day. So that's a peak season, but really most of the year you can come here. Virtually any month of the year you can come. Even in the summer months, we still get 60 to 75,000 visitors a month in the summertime. Again, these are mostly foreign tourists, European travelers, particularly who come during the summer months, and they like it hot. They're here to experience what the desert is, and they know the hot season is the time to come if you want to see what the desert's like.
Now, in terms of actually camping, what facilities do you have available?
There are 9 campgrounds in the park. Several of them have water because we are a desert site. Not all of our campgrounds have water. So people need to bring their own water to a number of the campsites. It's a little bit more of a primitive camping experience than maybe what some visitors are used to. But the campgrounds offer tables and restrooms and grills, for cooking and making fires. You can make a fire in the park, but you need to bring your own wood because there's not much wood in the desert landscape.
And also backcountry camping?
You can go pretty much anywhere you want in the park. And you need to get about a mile off the road and basically be out of sight of the road in order to be legally camped in the wilderness areas. But like I say, there are no designated wilderness campsites. You can pretty much go wherever you like. A lot of our springs and water sources, though, are limited to day use only, though, and that has to do with the fact that they're used by wildlife in the evening hours for water that's essential to them, so we want to give them unhindered access to those springs, so we don't allow overnight camping close to the water sources, natural water sources in the park.
Let's talk about that wildlife and the best time to see the wildlife there.
Well, there's lots of different animals. We have 40 different mammal species, 40 different reptiles and amphibians occur in the park, over 240 species of birds. They tend to be active, most active during the spring months as well, during those times of the year when you have a lot of flowers and other vegetative growth, and that tends to cause the plant-eating animals to become more active, and then in turn that stimulates response among the predatory animals. Many of the animals here in the park have very successful adaptations to living in the extreme conditions here. A lot of our smaller rodents never have to drink water. They've evolved metabolic adaptations that enable them to retain all the water internally. They get water from seeds and vegetation that they eat, so they don't need to get to actual water sources. Some of the other larger animals, though, do need indeed to come down to places where they can find water. So they tend to be found near the stock dams and the springs and oases that we have in the park.
Well, there's a lot of wildlife to see there, and nighttime is a great time at dusk and things and in the morning to head out and see them. You also have a fairly colorful human history, and we don't have a lot of time, but when people come there, what can they expect to see?
The park has been used by people for something in the order of 9,000 years. The early Pinto culture inhabited the Pinto Basin area of the park on the eastern side of the park, left different sort of stone points and evidence of their existence here. At least four different modern Indian tribes use Josh Tree either as encampments or for hunting and gathering activities. And then the modern history includes homesteaders.
You know what, Joe? I always do this. I always let people go on too long.
We're running on here. Okay?
Thanks so much, Joe, for being on. I encourage people to visit Joshua Tree National Park.